Edgar A. Guest. That's a name that's very familiar to those who have read poetry. Guest was a British-born American poet. He was known as the people's poet. His work was widely syndicated in newspapers all across the United States in the first half of the 20th century. His syndicated poems brought poetry into homes throughout the country. And the poems of Edgar A. Guest were quite popular. And they were popular largely because they presented a deeply sentimental view of life. A number of his poems I have found as favorites of mine, but one poem of Edgar A. Guest that has always had a very deep meaning for me personally is a poem entitled The Painter. When my hair is thin and silvered, and my time of toil is through, when I've many years behind me, and ahead of me but few, I shall want to sit, I reckon, sort of dreaming in the sun, and recall the roads I've traveled, and the many things I've done. And I hope there'll be no picture that I'll hate to look upon when a time to paint it better or to wipe it out is gone. I hope there'll be no vision of a hasty word I've said that's left a trail of sorrow like a whip welt, sore and red. And I hope my old age dreaming will bring back no bitter scene of a time when I was selfish or a time when I was mean. When I'm getting old and feeble and I'm far along life's way, I don't want to sit regretting any bygone yesterday. I'll admit the children boss me. I'll admit I often smile when I ought to frown upon them. But for just a little while, they are naughty, romping youngsters that I have no heart to scold. And I know if I should whip them, I'd regret it when I'm old. Age to me would be a torment and a ghost-infested night if I'd ever hurt a baby and I couldn't make it right. I'm painting now the pictures that I'll someday have to see. I'm filling in a canvas that will come back soon to me. And though nothing great is on it, and though nothing there is fine, I shall want to look it over when I'm old and call it mine. And I do not dare to leave it while the paint is warm and wet, with a single thing upon it that I'll later on regret. In our text this morning, we have a man who's looking back over his life. A man who, as the poet says, has many years behind him and ahead of him but few. And Caleb is recalling the roads he's traveled, and Caleb is recalling the things that he's done. You see, Caleb is a man telling of his experiences. And it's an experience that's worth hearing about. He's a man who had a grand yesterday. A man who has a noble present. And a man who is looking out expectantly on tomorrow. He's a man who's accounting for all that he has been, and he's accounting for all that he hopes to be. And what Caleb says in the passage where our text is contained, if you read the entire context, Caleb frankly says, all that I am and all that I ever hope to be, I owe to the fact that I am a follower of God. Here's what he says in Joshua chapter 14 and verse 8. He says, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. That, my friends, accounts for the success that Caleb made of his life. Caleb could say, I wholly followed the Lord my God. And one of the great weaknesses of our day and time, one of the great weaknesses of the Lord's church in the 21st century, is that so many people do not wholly follow the Lord. We're religious. And we're Christian after a fashion. But how many of us are wholehearted? How many of us can say, as Caleb said, I wholly followed the Lord my God? Beloved, it's that man or that woman that's wholehearted that wins. Go back in the Old Testament, way back in the Old Testament, and look at the story of Abraham and his nephew Lot. They were both religious men. They both built altars. They were both men of prayer. And yet, while Abraham and Lot were both religious, in the ultimate outcome of the lives of Abraham and Lot, they were as far apart as night is from day. And what was the difference? The difference was not that Abraham believed in God and Lot did not believe in God. The difference was not that one was interested in spiritual things and that the other one had no interest at all in spiritual things. The difference in Abraham and Lot was that Abraham's religion, Abraham's service to God, was the biggest thing and the biggest fact about him. Every question of Abraham's life was decided and tested by the will of God. Lot's religion never mastered him. God was never able to fully take Lot's heart captive. When a clash came between his religion and his material interests, Lot's religion always lost. When there was a conflict between the will of God and the will of Lot would always win. And so it's no surprise that while Abraham represents to us all that is most beautiful in sainthood, Lot glares at us across the centuries as a charred and blackened ruin. The only message that comes to us from the dumb lips of Lot is, do not waste your life the way I wasted mine. Do not fling yourself away the way I flung myself away. Oh, but not so with Caleb. As Caleb looks back over his yesterdays, I can see this man, his hair is thin and silvered, like the poet says. I see him by an eye of faith. And he looks back and Caleb frankly tells us, he says, I wholly followed the Lord. He committed his life to God. He wholly followed the Lord, and God made Caleb a man of great faith. It was through faith that Caleb came to know God. However, it was in loyalty to God that Caleb found a deeper, more meaningful, ever-growing faith. Quite often, the weakness of our faith is not a weakness that's born of intellectual difficulties. It's not a weakness born of the fact that in our intellectual mind we don't have faith. The weakness of our faith is born of our moral lapses. But it is in wholehearted loyalty to that faith that we find a larger, deeper, more meaningful faith. Caleb, the very first time we're introduced to him in the Scriptures, impresses us with the greatness of his faith. The first time we meet Caleb, he has just returned with the other 11 spies from exploring the land of Canaan. But when those 12 spies that Moses sent out come back from exploring the land of Canaan, those spies are not all of one mind. They do not come back and bring in a unanimous report. There's the majority report and there's the minority report. Now, both sides agree on one thing. They agree that the land they've explored is a beautiful land. It's a land that's worth possessing. It's a land that's flowing with milk and honey. But the majority, made up of 10 spies, they declare that the difficulties that are in the way of possessing the land are so great, the difficulties are so insurmountable, that they make any effort in that direction almost futility. And as these 10 are bringing forth the majority report, that's when, it's over in Numbers, and that's when Caleb comes forward. With a great matter of difficulty, Caleb stills the crowd. Caleb gets their attention. And Caleb compels them to hear him. And he stills them. And he speaks with conviction. And he tells them. He says, I'm well aware of the difficulties in taking the land. I'm as aware of the difficulties as the majority is aware of it. But Caleb, with his great faith in God, Caleb is certain that these difficulties can be overcome. He says, let us go up at once and possess it. And he says it with enthusiasm. Let's go up at once and possess it, the land. There are giants in the land, but those giants are bread for us. You see, Caleb is confident of victory. And the reason that Caleb is confident of victory is that Caleb is certain that God has given them the land. Caleb is the kind of man that's an asset in any enterprise. Any man, any woman who is possessed of a valiant, vibrant, victorious faith is an asset in the work of God. Because those with a valiant, vibrant, victorious faith. While the doubters discuss the problems, while the doubters whine about the impossibilities, people of faith claim victory. Doubters look at the difficulties, and looking at the difficulties, they become weak because they see nothing more than certain failure. But people like Caleb, people with a great faith, they don't look at the difficulties. They don't look at the problems. They look at God. And looking at God, they become strong and certain. He was a man of courage. That was the moral outcome of his faith. The natural outcome of his faith was courage. You remember Elijah, God's man Elijah? You remember how fearless Elijah was as he stood in the presence of Ahab? Without a tremor in his voice or a tremor in his limbs, Elijah looked Ahab straight in the eye and rebuked Ahab to his face. How could he do that? How could that man of God be so fearless to such a powerful king? What was the secret of his fearlessness? The secret of the fearlessness of Elijah was he was so aware and so keenly conscious of the presence of the king that he was utterly forgetful to be afraid in the presence of a king. Write this down. It's on the final exam. Faith will always be the mother of courage. Caleb said to those other spies, he said, "Let's go up at once and let's possess the land." It took courage to say that. He's a part of a most insignificant minority. And he was opposed by a vast majority that was discouraged, they were impatient, and they were angry. And for Caleb to take that stand against those other 10 spies, it meant not only was he going to face their sneers and their jeers and their ridicule, it actually meant positive physical danger for Caleb. Because that vast majority of Israel was becoming a frenzied mob. They were threatening to stone Caleb for even making the proposal he was making that they go up and possess the land. But in the face of that kind of opposition, he had the courage to be eager, to be ready, to go against a confessedly strong and powerful enemy. He had surveyed the land of Canaan. He knew there were walled cities in the land of Canaan. He knew the people of Canaan were strong and gigantic in size. But Caleb was willing and ready to dare all in conflict with them. Caleb was prepared then and there to bet his life that God would keep faith with them and God would give them victory. So what did he do? Caleb dared to brave the ridicule. Caleb dared to brave the threats of his people. He dared to brave the strength of the enemy because his faith in the God of heaven had made him a man of great courage. You see, he had a Christ-like patience. His resolution to go up and possess the land was voted down overwhelmingly. The sound advice of Caleb was set aside. He was absolutely sure that he was right. He was absolutely sure their position was wrong. But he showed no anger. And he showed no resentment when he was outvoted. He didn't withdraw. He didn't refuse to have anything to do with those faithless and cowardly people. He still believed. He still believed that with all their faults, they were the hope of the world. But I want you to use your sanctified imagination. And can you, by an eye of faith, imagine the heaviness of heart that this believing man had? He wanted to go up and possess the land, but he was outvoted. And he was compelled to turn his face from the land of his dreams back toward the wilderness. But he never whined. He never said, "I told you so." I like to think that he helped his generation to die as peacefully as possible. I like to think that he gave himself heart and soul to training a younger generation. I can almost, by an ear of faith, hear Caleb say, "If my generation has failed, the world moves forward on the feet of youth. We must train another generation to be more loyal and more faithful than we have been," he would say. So with Christ-like patience, Caleb worked. And he waited. And he never grew old. He never became that old man. In Joshua chapter 14 in our text, when we meet Caleb, He's reached the point that, as the poet says, his hair is thin and silvered. It's been almost half a century since that scene at Kadesh Barnea where he was outvoted. In our text, Caleb is 85 years old, but he's still beautifully young. Winter has visited him every year. But though winter has visited him every year, he has been too busy entertaining spring to notice. He was a man of God who lived his life in an abiding mourning. And because of his faith, he possessed the secret of perpetual youth. And with that faith, with that outlook on life, Caleb's face was confidently toward the future. Over the brief years of my life, the 39 years I've lived, I have known some in the morning of life who, if you talked to them, you felt that they'd already lived their lives. I've known those in the morning of life that still in the morning of life, they looked wistfully at their dead yesterdays. And for them, the present holds little and the future holds absolutely nothing. Those who would say youth is folly, manhood is struggle, and old age is nothing but regret. But Caleb at 85. At 85, Caleb is just as expectant and just as eager and just as enthusiastic about the future as he was when he was 40 years old and went out to spy the land of Canaan the first time. This man still possesses the fine audacity and the madness of youth. He's still eager to adventure. He's still full of fiery daring in his life. He's lost none of the impetuosity of youth. Let's be honest. Time has a way of completely taming and subduing most of us, doesn't it? Time has a way of extinguishing the fires of enthusiasm in our heart. Time has a way of slowing down the quick beating of our hot hearts. And what happens is we become prudent. We become sane. And yes, we become dull. We come to a place where we no longer see visions. We come to a point where we no longer dream dreams. But that wasn't the case with Caleb. Caleb found the way to avoid that tragedy. This man of 85 years comes to Joshua in our text. They're dividing the land. And he comes to Joshua with the request that he be given the most difficult task in the kingdom. Read the entire story. Caleb says, "Give me this mountain." He's burningly eager at this late day to undertake the most difficult job he's ever done. And because of his faith, because of his determination, because he was a dreamer of dreams and a seer of visions, the life of Caleb becomes an abiding benediction for us. Caleb was a great, great blessing to those around him. The service that Caleb rendered to those who knew him personally, no one but God will ever know. He left the lands that he inherited, or that he conquered, as an inheritance to those who came after him. But my friends, Caleb left something that's infinitely worth more than lands or gold. Caleb left a wealth that's making you and me richer even at this very hour. Caleb left a rich legacy. The legacy of a life grandly lived in unswerving, unwavering loyalty to God. And that is always the case of those who wholly follow the Lord. What kind of life are you living this morning? What kind of legacy are you leaving for your children and for those generations to come after you? Can it be said of me? Can it be said of you? Can we say with Caleb, "But I wholly followed the Lord my God"? Can that be said? Or are there changes that need to be made in your life to be able to say with Caleb, "But I wholly followed the Lord my God"? Can we help you make those changes? Give us the opportunity to do that as together we stand and while we sing.